something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh. Look at you two. You, I swear to God, how many years has it been and you have not aged a day? A day.
It's been 7 since we started shooting. We've had to do that math.
7 years. Wow.
How are you? Tell me everything from the beginning of when we've stopped seeing each other. Tell me everything. Go.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we stopped seeing each other at the end of season 2. Mm-hmm. And so since then, I've been on 2 shows. So
amazing.
I was three years on New Amsterdam for NBC.
Yeah.
And then, and Dom, is this going to blow your mind what I've been working on recently?
I literally just saw it
in
my notes and I was like, wait, did I know? Not from the previous one, surely. Like, I think I would have remembered that. No, go ahead, please.
So currently I am working on the TV adaptation of Vampire Academy, which Dom was in the movie.
I'm so
world.
Excited for this. I'm so excited for it. I saw the casting announcements. I think they're brilliant.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations, Shireen. And
Thank you.
It's really been one of our favorite bits of doing this is to get to reconnect with folks that kind of started our journey on the show and then now have gone on to do astronomically incredible things. I mean, having come from astronomically incredible things and, you know, made a pit stop at our little Shadowhunters Island along the way. But, you know, we just wanted to make sure we brought you on to talk to you about you and what it is you do and everything that, you know, you're doing since. But talk to us a little bit. Let's start at the beginning. You know, we've started at the end. Let's start at the beginning. Talk to us a little bit about how you decided you wanted to become a writer and what your first kind of, what made you fall in love with it? And what was that journey like for you getting into television?
Wow. Okay. I feel like I'm going into a network meeting. So I'm South Asian. And so obviously being South Asian, I was expected to be a doctor. I think in high school, I basically said, no, I don't want to do that. And it was scandalous, absolutely scandalous. And when I told them what I wanted to do instead, it was even more scandalous. I said, I wanted to do radio, television, film. And so my parents were like, well, yeah, we're not paying for that unless you, you know, do something in addition to that, that you can actually make money.
Yeah.
And make, you know, support yourself. So my oldest brother had gone through advertising. So I double majored in advertising and radio, television, film. And
wow.
I took a sidetrack into advertising, advertising career for a bit, but I had this nagging little voice in the back of my head saying, why aren't you writing? Because I've been kind of a closeted writer since I was in middle school. And so while I was in New York working on Madison Avenue, I took some TV writing classes at this place called Gotham Writers Workshop, which is awesome. And I decided, you know, being a neurotic writer, I think you guys probably know this, writers are incredibly neurotic and we're terrified of showing our stuff to anyone. Like, you guys don't probably have this problem because you're in front of people all the time. And it's just like, you have to be out there.
No, we very much do.
Yeah, it depends. Like, there are certain people I would show certain things to. And, like, there's certain things my mom wouldn't want to see. You know what I mean? Like, there are, like, times where I'm like, yeah, watch all of it. And then, like, skip episode 4 because you don't want to see what I do in that. You know, like, or my grandmother. I'm like, I'm naked in this episode, so maybe don't watch that one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff in Vampire Academy where I'll be like, yeah, Dad, don't watch that. There's a lot of cursing in that episode.
They let you curse in it?
Yes, wow. It's for Peacock.
That's Peacock, so funny. Streaming. You know, Mark Waters, who directed the movie, he used to run this drill with us. And I've kept it in my arsenal ever since then. And it's called, we're allowed to swear on this, fortunately, because it's a podcast. And he calls it a fuck pass. And it's, which when he first mentioned it to me, I was like, I don't know if I'm willing to do that. And then he was like, no. It's you say the lines, you say the dialogue as you would were this an R-rated movie, where you were allowed to swear and do whatever you want. And I was like, oh, interesting. And what it does is sort of, it sort of elicits these new emotions coming through. And then you try and do the exact same line, the exact same way with the same emotions, and then strip the, you know, the lewd language away. And I've continued that in my career. I keep that up, and it's, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. But that's so interesting. I'm literally looking, I guess you guys just released your first like image of Lissa and Rose together. Wow.
This is
so cool. I'm so excited for this.
When you first sort of made a foray into television and then made your way to Shadowhunters, did you know of the books? Had you read them previously? What was your experience? And what was your sort of first impression of this world? What drew you to it?
Well, it's funny because genre is just my thing. And so well, back then, I don't have as much time to keep up on all the genre because, you know, there's like 10 million DC and Marvel movies. Like, I
there's
can't do
so
all of them.
Much.
Yeah.
But back then, there wasn't as many, and especially love fantasy. So when the movie came out, I saw it in the theaters. And so I didn't know back then that it was attached to a book series.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the TV show was being developed, I had just finished writing it was more like a supernatural pilot myself. And so that was submitted to the showrunner.
Mm.
And it was very much in line with Shadowhunters in that it was supernatural, it was female forward, and it was YA. And so when I got on the show, or when I was basically getting the offer, I started reading all of the books, and the books just like transported me. And I there was such a rich world, so much to do and say with the material, that I was already excited because it was genre. But then when reading the books, I was exponentially excited with what we could do with the world. the thing that scared me about it was just how dense the mythology was. And I was like, how are we going to explain this to the audience?
Well, that begs another question. How do you, as a writer, take something, especially someone who, you know, sort of specializes in genre and fantasy, how do you take a world like that and break down and digest it and translate? And how do you even begin to figure that out?
Thankfully, it wasn't just me. There was a and part of it is because I've worked on a bunch of shows now that have been based on books of some sort. And so one of the shows that I worked on was Rizzoli and Isles, which is based on a book series of mystery book series. And one of the things that I learned from that showrunner was when you adapt a book, you kind of have to throw away the book and then come back to the book in some fashion. So what we looked at, because there's the dense mythology, but there's also the aspect of the books that is, it's very much in Clary's head, right? And so when you look at the books as a whole, there's not a lot of plot. Because so much is happening internally. And so we have to manufacture a plot for the screen. And then we also have to manufacture story for the other characters because everything is told in the books from Clary's point of view.
That's true.
So that is part of throwing away the book and coming back to the book. And it's also just coming up with that list of what are the things that the fans are going to kill us if they don't see? What are those moments that are iconic? And trying to figure out how we're going to build story around that was just, that was so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's something too that I think you as a writer's room did such a great job at is doing just that, is making the experience of this story fresh for even the most avid book fan who knows every single word and every single line. Because you're right, there are those iconic moments and characters and character traits and little Easter eggs throughout, and yet the story still feels fresh and new, and it's because it's not in Clary's head, it's a new perspective.
Yeah, but it was the thing that I was so excited about was just working on a female empowerment show. And Kat, you just like, you owned it on screen. You really owned it on screen. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I've said this time and time again. I, you know, growing up as a little girl, I wanted a character like Clary and I looked for it. And, you know, the fact that not only Clary, but every single woman on the show, every single female character, every character in general had their own sense of agency and their own unique sense of empowerment in their own way. And it was such a beautiful example. And it made me so proud to be a part of the show that was telling the story that, you know, an empowered female isn't just one person or one kind of person. It can be anyone, no matter what your gifts are, no matter what you look like, no matter whether you're a shadow hunter or a warlock or a vampire, you can still be a badass female.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of our show covered that, which, you know, from my position of privilege, it's a nice thing to be a part of, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to be inspired by every day, to be able to come to work and see these stories being told from these people and think like, yeah, this is the direction we should be going. Like not just in film and TV, but more as a society, this is where we should be like leading things that everyone's stories are important. Like everyone telling their story, whether it's from a place of strength or you know, a place of weakness is the wrong way of putting it. I was having this conversation with someone recently about you're often stronger. I think we were talking, might have been talking about Shadowhunters, I can't really remember, but the crux of the conversation was you're often stronger in a situation where you allow yourself to be more vulnerable and taking that position there. And the ability for you guys, especially as a writer's room, to develop these worlds where the strongest characters were vulnerable, but that didn't make them weaker, it made them stronger because they had the wherewithal and the emotional strength to be able to share that vulnerability with the people around them and also then tackle it, which I think does show a huge amount of strength as well. And it's that sort of yin yang of the emotional plethora of being able to deal with all of them. And I think you guys did a really spectacular job at that.
Well, and Dom, to your point too, we had not only so much diversity in character and in storyline, but it's a real credit to the writer's room because you weren't afraid to shy away, or you never shied away from things that were uncomfortable or difficult or could have had pushback in 7 years ago when we were shooting from anyone. You know, you took the bull by the horns and said, no, we're going to tell these stories about diversity. We're going to tell these stories where we, and we're not going to be afraid to put our characters through the ringer to show that, you know, you can overcome these things. And not only as an actor, but as an audience, it's really gratifying. So thank you.
Well, thanks. That's the thing that I love most about genre is being able to talk about social justice issues in allegory. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. That was one of the beautiful things that was just built into the books from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And to Dom, to your point about vulnerability, I was rewatching some of the episodes leading up to this, and the just like the amount of vulnerability that you brought to Jace, that there's this beautiful look that would come on your face when you were, especially, okay, for example, when we discover Michael Whalen in the little closet.
We were just talking about
talked about this. Yeah.
And so that look on your face, oh.
Well, so much of it comes from you guys. So I explained this briefly when we were dealing with the episode, and then we actually spoke to Adam as well. The weirdest thing, Adam is now my girlfriend's acting coach, as well as a working actor. So my girlfriend had a premiere at Santa Barbara International Film Festival, which was this amazing film called Juniper. If you get a second, go and watch it. They're actually very women-led, three women created it over quarantine. It's an incredible film. You should go and check it out. But we then had Adam on and we were talking about this. And so much of this came from you guys, right? So the way I sort of discovered the emotion with Jace is like sat down and I broke down, how would someone who's emotional or vulnerable feel that when their entire life they've been told that's not what you feel? And what I kind of came up with, I would circle through different ideas and I didn't feel right. And then I would come back and whatever. And what I landed on is it would be like a little boy. You'd be like a little boy. You would be experiencing it for the first time, like a little boy whose parents had to leave and you couldn't communicate that they were leaving.
Yeah.
Like, or you little boy who stubbed his toe, got his favorite toy taken away, or had to eat his peas, whatever it is. Like that, you know what I mean? Like, it's silly, but that emotion of like, I can feel that, you know, when you can feel it when you're about to cry, it's in the back of your throat first and you're like, oh, I don't know what this is. Like, why is this happening to me? And then it starts to like manifest itself in your body. And that's how I wanted to show Jace, because he is in those moments. He's like a little boy. The big one that I remember is that moment. And then in season 2B, it must be post sword, post accidental genocide, and he's up on the roof and Alec comes and comes to comfort him, and he turns around and he's just a broken little boy. Like, he's completely lost and he just needs his best friend to hug him. That's all he needs. And that came from you guys. That started from you guys. Like, I took it and I ran with it a little, but the basis of that came from you. And this is, I guess, is sort of leading to the question then. It's as it should be. We're not interested in hearing me talk. We've been heard episodes and episodes of that. We're interested in hearing you talk. The question then from that is, where does the sort of responsibility lie with things like Jace, and then moving on to, like, because you sort of almost semi-handed off to the actors and then the crew on set. And have there ever been opportunities where actors have surprised you, or they've taken things and you've been like, oh, that's interesting, that's not what I thought was going to happen there? Or maybe less calm than that, where you watch it and you go, or maybe that's exactly go, oh, not what I wanted to
no,
happen.
Not that. Oh, God.
Before I answer that, I just have to say, hearing Dom, hearing you in your natural accent is just, like, weird, blowing me away a little bit, because even on set, you would be in Jace's accent. So I'm just like, who is this?
Who are you? Yes, Dom's going through a phase where he thinks he's British. We're dealing with
Matt's
it.
This is favorite
it's
joke.
Fine.
He's like, Dom's actually from Kentucky, and this is a whole act that he's put on to get parts and girlfriends over the course of his life. And if anyone repeats that, no, I'm kidding.
Well, Dom, hate to break it to you, but you've just told the entire podcast audience. So the jig
Damn
is
it.
Up.
Shereen, we're done interrupting. We're done interrupting. Please tell us about your process through handing off your writing to actors and to the crew on set.
In terms of like the one, not the one time, but the one that surprised me the most is... was Emerald in the alternate universe when she's playing the nerdy girl.
Yeah.
And I hadn't envisioned that in my head. I just was like, this is a girl that's who's just, you know, she's kind of a science nerd. She's a computer tech nerd, but mm-hmm. she just ran with it and went ultra nerd. And yeah. then there's this moment where she's dancing at the party and doing like a half robot thing.
So good.
And she allowed herself to just look so, so nerdy and so awkward. And it was just brilliant. And I was just like, mm-hmm. oh my God, that is not what I was expecting. That was not what I had in my head, but this is so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's the magic of a show like Shadowhunters. And we saw this time and time again with different departments, but particularly as, you know, the writers and the cast got to know each other and we sort of created these character stories together, there's a kind of symbiosis that happens. And, you know, we were so lucky to have a group of people in all departments that just set ego aside and decided to share and create together and truly be, you know, collaborators together. And it really, you see that time and time again. And that's such a great example of that.
Yeah, that was kind of like the beauty. And it's the beauty of working on any show is like you see certain things in your head as you're writing. And when the actor takes it and makes it better, you're like, oh, this is why I work in this medium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Now, is there something for you in particular that was important to imbue into the story, or an episode that you look back and you're like, oh, that was my favorite, or this scene was, I really loved, like this meant something to you?
Yeah, you're a genre nerd and you read the books and you watched the movie. What was there had to have been things where you're like, this needs to be in the show.
For me, it was what was baked into the books from the beginning. It was the classism and the racism and how that affects people, and then showing how one person can make a difference in that, because Clary does start bringing everybody together. Mm. Because, I mean, just the way that society has fractured in the most recent years.
Yeah.
It can take one person to do that fracturing. It can take one person to start bringing all those people together. And
yeah,
I want a Shadowhunters for today to show that this is possible. We can bring people back together and work together and not try and tear each other down. And the moment when I can't remember which season now, but when Clary gets all the downworlders together to help, I think it was to go save Meliorn, right?
Oh yeah, that was season one, episode 9.
Whoa, that's pretty good.
Well, we just finished the rewatch of episode, and actually, I believe your episode of the podcast is going to air right after our rewatch of that episode, so that's perfect.
Awesome, yeah. Because the thing about that was that I think in the next episode one of the episodes right after that, Luke is talking to Simon about how that's what is special about Clary, is that she can bring all these people together, mm-hmm, that don't want to talk to each other, that don't want to work together, that actually hate each other, to do something that's super important. And that was to, mm-hmm, that was to avoid a downworlder war. Is that right?
I think that was to avoid the Clave breaking the accords.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So Meliorn was on his way to be executed, which would have broken the cords and separated the somewhat tenuous ties that the downworld had via the accords to the Clave, and then through each other, and would potentially have started a downworld civil war. So yeah, wow, good memory. Yeah. Well done. We just watched it like 2 weeks ago, so that's like, it's fresh in my mind. They just did a very good job.
And what about the things that you did change from the books? You know, were as a writer, are you ever trepidatious about doing that, or was there ever a moment where you went, I don't know? But I mean, our fandom, granted, it was always pretty accepting of most of the changes that we made, but we didn't know that when we were starting off the show.
There was one change that was going to go in, I think it was one of my episodes, that we shied away from because we thought the fandom might kill us.
Wow.
Tell us what the change was. Yeah,
can
I
you say?
Know. I'm so
yeah,
curious
I mean, you didn't
now.
Do it.
I'm trying to remember which episode it was now, but it might have actually been the alternate reality one, mm-hmm, because Alec is trying to find Jace through the Parabatai bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was my pitch that we break the Parabatai bond completely.
Wow.
In that episode. And wow, the reason being was because, again, we know that the audience that's watching the show is, some of them are book readers, but some, mm-hmm, of them are just, yeah, coming in as genre fans.
Yeah.
And so when we jumped into this world, we jumped in with Clary, but we never got to see what becoming a Parabatai was all about and what you have to do
I was hoping
and what that bond is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the idea was break the parabatai bond and then watch Jace and Alec have to reform it on screen.
Right. That would have been cool. That would have been a lot
so
of fun.
Cool. I'm also glad you didn't because it would have broken a lot of hearts.
Yeah.
But that would have been a really interesting take on that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It's interesting because we did end up sort of somewhat showing it in must have been season 3 when we went back through with flashbacks. All I really remember of it is that poor kid. I can't remember his name for the life of me. I gotta look it up. The poor kid who played me had to wear one brown contact lens the whole way through, and I was like, "I'm so sorry. This is dreadful. I really apologize. No. I know it's uncomfortable." But it's interesting that you're aware that there is this pressure. You're taking on something that has already had a couple of versions, but obviously you're doing Vampire Academy now. You've done Shadowhunters. It's something. Do you find you thrive under that pressure, or it's something that just doesn't bother you? Like you keep going back. You keep coming back.
You're
more
used to it now.
I think when I came into Shadowhunters, I knew there was a big fandom, but I didn't realize how rabid they were until the show started.
Mm-hmm.
I got my first death threat on Shadowhunters, and so I was like, "I've arrived."
No. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you know, Twitter is Twitter. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But I think I don't think I'm less cautious. There's part of me that is, I think about it in terms of longevity of the show and longevity of what's going to entertain the audience. Because again, as rabid as book fans are, there's still only a small percentage of your audience.
It is a small percentage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thank God for writers being brave enough to take those chances, honestly, because you're right. And I also do feel like fans of the book say they want a carbon copy of the book, but I don't know if they do. I don't know. I think if you watched it and you saw the exact same story just done instead of reading and not in your imagination, it might get a little boring quite quickly. Like, you know how these stories end. So I don't know if that's what they... Speaking of death threats, my first... And it's so funny that, like... Of 1,000 comments in a day, the one that's slightly negative is the one that I hold on to for a week and it ruins my week. That when I first joined, when I first got announced for the show, there were like 3 people who consistently commented sort of the same thing, and it's that I wasn't blonde. And I was like, God, wait until you find out I'm not half angel. You're going to be furious. This is just not how it works. Like, it was such an easy fix.
Wait, you're not half angel?
I'm not half angel. No.
Oh my...
I know.
All right. Well, I'm upset now.
More's the pity. It's funny, isn't it? Because they ruin your day. And for anyone out there listening, hopefully there's none of you listening, but don't send death threats. That's childish. Don't send death threats. That's
not
just
nice.
Silly. Stop it.
Not
That's
nice.
Enough out of you guys. It's peace and love. Peace and love and joy and happiness. That's all we need.
We're telling stories. Yeah. There's no need for that.
And if you do, send them my way, because I don't have a Twitter, so you won't send them to the right place.
Are you an Instagram only, Dom?
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago, I took a social media step back. Like, I was approaching my 30s, and I unfollowed everyone, which led to all these questions about relationships and whatever. And in my head, I was like, this is the exact thing that I think is no good here. Like, this is the exact thing that, like, I can use my Instagram now. My Twitter went. And my Instagram is now really just for the work that I do, the charities that I work with, and then the occasional picture of Dan, like my dog. That's all it is now.
Those are my favorite.
And I think it's so individual. Social media is such a big part of our world and arguably our industry. But for me, I noticed that it didn't impact my career at all, which there was a part of me that was afraid that maybe it would. And I personally was happier. Like, I didn't spend a lot of time looking at my phone because the algorithm was gone. So because I didn't follow anyone or look at anything, it didn't know what to show me. So I wasn't glued to my phone the whole time. And I just found myself a little happier because of it. So that's sort of for you and anyone who was wondering, that's the reason why I did that.
Yeah. Well, and we've been very lucky too with Shadowhunters, and that's part of why we're here doing a podcast, is that our fandom is so loving and so beautiful. And, you know, all in all, yes, obviously there's people that are disgruntled and don't say the nicest things from time to time, but on the whole, the fandom is an incredibly supportive one. That's it's the reason we do conventions all over the world. It's the reason that we are here today doing this podcast, because they've taken this community far beyond ourselves and far beyond the characters and the story and all of this, and made it a support system for each other. And, you know, that's, you know, why we're here celebrating it. But we have the advantage of seeing the beauty of social media in a lot of our experiences, as opposed to the other side.
Shireen, I have a question that I've asked everyone, and that phrase is going to be like old hat by the time this comes out. But
Can you just copy paste?
is there like a scene or an episode that you loved? You loved either writing or watching or just being a part of in any way, shape, or form. And is there one that was more difficult to either write, or was more complicated, or took a little more out of you to write for whatever reason?
Provided a challenge of sorts.
Just a scene?
No, anything. Episode, scene.
Or a scene, an episode, maybe not an arc, a season. A character.
try and condense it more than a whole season. Yeah.
The episode where we tell basically the whole backstory, where we meet Valentine and Jocelyn and Luke as their younger selves, that was a really tough episode to write, just because there was just so much information that had to be conveyed, and trying to figure out how to parse that into scenes that would be interesting, engaging to watch. Kat, you probably remember you and Luke were just in a room for, I don't know, an entire day, just shooting this long sequence of talking back and forth about what was going to be, the flashbacks were interstitial in there. But if you think about it as, well, what if we had only seen that long scene between Clary and Luke on screen?
I mean, listening to Isaiah tell that story would be great.
But at the same time, it's like, well, we didn't come to Shadowhunters for story time. So how do we show this in an engaging way? And so when we would cut back to you and Isaiah, it was adding, you know, you were getting that emotional thrust to it of, this is how it impacted Luke, or this is how it's impacting Clary in this moment. And so that was probably, that was one of the hardest episodes to write. And actually just to break the story in total, because it's like, we know that this is what the episode's about. Go. And we're like, crap.
How interesting, because that's not that's not something we think about, really, you know. We get the words and we're like, oh, this makes perfect sense, this has been done beautifully in the script, like that's just how we get it, and but we like never think about, like, oh wow, this must have been really difficult to like segue in bits of people's past that are super important to the future, but really do, or it didn't in this case, but have the potential to put a real stopper in the motion of the episode, right? How fascinating. And what about your favorite? Was there a favorite thing that you wrote?
I would say also that episode, just because it ended up turning out so beautifully.
Oh, interesting.
It really did.
That's really cool.
Because the way that everybody took that episode, the cast and the crew and the props people. I mean, wasn't that the first time that we saw the Mortal Cup in person?
I think so. And the sword, and, you know, Idris for the first time. So many things we saw even Isaiah half his random werewolf transformations.
Yes.
You know, and it's the first time we saw Magnus doing his thing, which then spawned a whole set in future seasons. Yeah, you're right. It established so much.
Yeah. The other part of that episode that I loved was the first part of the story, which was between Clary and Magnus, and just watching Magnus come down from Magnus to, oh crap, I got to tell her this story now. And oh, this is not going to make me look good. While he's stirring his cauldron of stuff.
Yeah.
It's the, it, it's that wonderful moment that, you know, as we talked about with the vulnerability, where you take these characters that are so grandiose and powerful and you humanize them time and time again. And I think up until that point, we didn't really know if Magnus was a good guy or not. And this is the first time we sort of saw him as a real ally.
Yeah. And that was that the first time? That was like the first quote unquote date between Alec and Magnus too?
Yeah.
Ish. At the
he
end,
sort of asked somewhere for around him, there. Didn't he ask for him to come to, like, he needed his energy in
Virgin yeah. Shadowhunter energy?
Yeah. That's right.
Which, that's a book quote, isn't it? Or is that, was that a you guys?
That is a very good question. And I am going to plead the fifth.
I don't remember either. And I'm usually, admittedly, I'm usually really good about that as well. But well, how about listeners out there? Why don't you tell us? Because it's been 7 years and we've lost track of certain things.
Indeed. Indeed. I figure that wherever I stumble, the listeners will fill in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, that's how I've gotten by these past 7 years since filming the show. That's when they'll pick up the slack for me if I mention like I'm in the wrong episode or whatever. Or have you ever had one of those questions where it's like, something messes up with continuity or something and they're like, the stiletto was in your right hand and now it's in your left hand. The answer's always like, it's a fantasy show, as a wizard, a warlock did it. It's a fantasy show. It was a whole thing. It was a portal. When you go into a portal, things change hands all of a sudden. That's what happened.
Just, you know, sleight of hand. Jace is a master of sleight of hand and just does it on the random for reasons.
Oh, this is interesting. So there's something in my notes that said, in an interview, you would have loved to explore the super dark Clary. What would that have looked like? So explain what super dark Clary is in your head and then maybe tell us what that would have looked like.
So super dark Clary, I think in my head was... I think what we ended up sort of doing with Jace. So it might have been before we took, you know, Jace off with Valentine. I think it might have been that in my head it was Clary that went off with Valentine instead.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Really interesting. Wow.
Oh,
it's
wow.
So funny that these, like, I mean, they're never small choices to you when you're in the room. You know, you, as you're saying, you sort of agonize over whether or not they're the right choice to put them in the show.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting that these choices were made, these discussions were had that would have like shaped the show. Audiences, even us as actors, we don't know these conversations that are had, and they would have shaped the futures of these characters, which I think is so fascinating. Like, what does that conversation, how does it go down? Like, because we know it's sort of, we just spoke to Michael Reese, and it's, like, very sort of round table discussion-y, right? You share stories and whatever.
That's a good question, Dom, because I'm really curious to know. You know, every time we go visit the writer's room, it's such a place shrouded in this magical mystery with writing all over the walls that we're not allowed to look at. And you all just sort of go, don't read the walls. Don't look at anything. Don't ask questions. We're here. And so, yeah, tell us, give us a peek behind the curtain as much as you can.
A writer's room is an incredibly collaborative place. It is a round table discussion. Some writer's rooms are you're in couches. I would fall asleep in those ones. I have to sit
Me
straight
too.
Up. It'll be a bad scene. And it is a lot of people just pitching out ideas. And then when you land on, for an example, should it be Clary that goes off with Valentine or Jace that goes off with Valentine? You land on those two things. Mm-hmm. And then people just, you know, you set up camp and it's like this little war between two sides.
Oh, wow. Like debate team in school kind of deal.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's amicable, obviously, because you're in a writer's room. But you go through the pros and cons and what would that do dramatically? What does that mean for the character? How would that, because I think that happens kind of.
It's like last episode of season one. It's in 13, episode 13 of season one.
So you know that this is going to be launching you into season two. And so it's like, so how is that going to affect the arc for season two? It's a huge decision, obviously, to make because you're trying to decide which character is going to be broken at the beginning of season two, and how are you going to build them back up to their former selves or into a better person over the course of season two. Yeah.
And thank you all very much for the beginning of season two. That was just wonderful for me. Just straight into like torture and horrible birthing stories
sweaters.
And then finally get back. Oh God, that sweater. Now that obviously that's not your fault. That's nobody's fault really. I put on this sweater. I don't know. Do you know this story?
I don't think so.
No. So the beginning of season two, I had this sweater, this like chunky knit, green, like itchy, fucking horrible sweater. I hated it.
It looks great.
Absolutely hated it. And I remember talking to Shelley, a costume designer who I adore, absolutely adore. And we obviously
we
joke about this
Shelley.
Now, but I put it on in the costume fitting and I'm like, look, I'm really not normally the guy to, but this is really itchy. Like it's really like starting to bug me. And the more I move, it's going to be itchy and whatever. And they're like, it's fine. Honestly, you're wearing it for like half of the first like 20 minutes of one episode and then you get tortured and it's, you know, it's all off and whatever. Unbeknownst to me, ended up back in it. And that was that was the costume for like, not even joking, like three episodes back to back. Like it was, so then there's more fighting in number two, jump off the side of the boat. So I wake up in the water in this fucking thing. And then I have to run back and find Alec and I'm like covered in blood. And the more blood that gets on it, then it's like itchy and sticky all at the same time. The end of that episode where I finally got to take it off, I was like, Shelley, take this away from me and like burn it. Just get rid of it. Nobody should be subjected to this ever again. That was my start.
I think she may have. Or maybe it's framed in a museum somewhere. Yeah. I don't know.
God.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There was an interesting question here, and I can sort of semi-tie it in. So the question is, what was your first day on set like? So this is interesting from a writer's perspective, So when we were doing Vampire Academy, Danny Waters, Mark's brother who wrote Vampire Academy, came to me like the first day we'd like just got to the studio in Pinewood, and he came to me and he goes, "Hey man, have you seen the Attic Library set?" And I was like, "I haven't. I have like just arrived." And he's like, "Come on, let me show you. And he was like more excited than me to show me this set that all we've done is read about for months and months and months. So what was your first day like?
My gosh, I'm trying to remember if I went to set first or if I went on a location scout first.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
My first day on set was just like walking into the cathedral, the institute, basically, yeah. The cathedral institute, and just seeing my face just went, "Holy crap. This is amazing."
Yeah.
Just seeing what the production designers had come up with, and then holding props and seeing like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." And then when we went on the location scouts, seeing what Idris would look like.
Mm-hmm.
For example, was that my first day? Was that my first episode? That might have been. So seeing all of that and having our amazing director, Oz Scott, and we're still friends to this day.
Aww.
I love him dearly.
Please give him our best.
I will. He working with somebody whose career goes back to the Jeffersons, first of all, just blew my mind. An African-American director who's been in the business for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him work with you guys in this collaborative way, because he comes from theater, and seeing how his brain was thinking about things, all of it just blew my mind altogether.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because that's what I remember about working with Oz, is that, as you said, we had such a challenging episode where, you know, it could have very easily been just me and Harry sitting in chairs and me and Isaiah sitting on a bed, you know, having story time. And between the way that you wrote it and the way that he directed it, we were always trying to find ways to either move one of us or move the camera and keep the audience engaged and keep the energy up and flowing. And, you know, it takes a village. It takes a whole team of everyone being cognizant of those things for an episode to be as impactful as that was.
It was a lot of fun. And it also just felt a little bit like a kid in a candy store. I was like, this is so much fun watching everything just come to life.
Yeah, that is, I think, how a lot of us felt kind of throughout. Especially, that's why I like to ask that question, especially that first time when you walk on set and you're like, wow, this is what it's going to look like. This is incredible. So that sort of leads me neatly to my next question, and it might be the same answer. Do you have a favorite moment? Do you have a favorite moment on either on set or seeing it on screen for the first time, or writing in the
favorite
room where you had like a light bulb moment? Do you have any, or like top few, maybe that might make it easier?
Yeah. Give us a couple.
Okay. One that comes to mind is I was walking around the area where everybody's trailers were, mm-hmm. and I ran into Harry. And we started chatting. And as I'm chatting with Harry, he's just like doing these little dance moves in front of me. And I'm like, this is fun. Because the first time I saw Harry was on Glee. And so mm-hmm. his big thing was dancing. And this was something that we kept trying to do in the writer's room. It was like, how can we get a place in a scene or create a moment where we can just let Harry dance?
Yeah.
Because he is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and essentially you did that because that's so much of his magic was the way that he moves. And that's, I mean, we just did Harry's interview and I think the majority of it was Dom and I just gushing over him. It's hard not to do with Harry. But he, you know, he has such a way with it. And I think that's, you know, each of us, at least I can't speak for myself, but I can speak for being a book fan, observing the rest of the cast. Everyone was cast for a reason. And everyone, you know, in front of and behind the camera, everyone is a part of this show because of something special that makes their creativity unique and adds to the magic of the show.
That's so true. This one's kind of outside of the show. I ran into Isaiah at Comic-Con, just randomly. Actually, it's happened twice, I think. One time, we were on the floor of Comic-Con, and my significant other is like, is that Isaiah? And I was like, no, is it? And so he screams out Isaiah's name. Isaiah turns around, and I'm like, hey! And he comes over and lifts me up and gives me this huge hug. But that's Isaiah. Isaiah is just like Mr.
He's
Big
so
Hugger.
That guy. My
he's Papa Wolf through and through.
Totally.
And always
my
will
family
be.
Friends were on the way to Ibiza and text me this like grainy photo of Isaiah. And I was like, have you just like sneakily took a photo of one of my castmates? And they were like, yeah, I think that's him. And I was like, it is. He's the nicest human being. Go up and say hi. Like that, this thing is weird. Like, go and say hi. Like, because he's the nicest guy. And apparently they sat and chatted the whole flight. He's just the nicest. He's the nicest guy.
Yeah. The number of people that I've run into that go, oh man, you're working with Isaiah. He's just the best.
Yeah.
Over the years have just been, yeah, it's just an endless. And same thing with Harry and so many others. It's been an endless stream of just love for the Shadow Fam.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my last one that I'll share was we were setting up for a shot. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what shot it was. And there was a Seraph Blade just sitting there. And I was like, picked it up. And I was like, just grinning at it. And the showrunner, Ed Dector, snapped a picture of me. And I have this picture of me just grinning with a Seraph Blade.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, we should see if we could find that picture and we'll throw it out there.
We were, I've told this a couple of times since we were there. I was just at the first live convention we did, face-to-face convention that we did in Dusseldorf. And one of the fans there, because after the show, a lot of the stuff got sold off. And so,
how did I not know about that?
How did I not know about it? I was like,
I didn't really want
some of this stuff. And this fan had my holsters that I wore from sort of season two onwards. And let me wear them again for the first time in like 5 years. I got to put them back on, and it was this really. And I had that. I'm sure positive that exact same face where I was just looking down, like, wow, this is so cool. Like, I feel like Jace again. This is really awesome. And then obviously, begrudgingly, I had to give them back, and I was like, yeah, great, enjoy them. But it is it's so much of what we do is like. It is like kids at Christmas. You know, we get these things and we got to read about them in the same way as we saw commercials for the toys we wanted when we were kids. I still do that now. It's like, Mom, I just saw this commercial. But then you actually get to see them in person, and that's really cool. It's a really cool thing to go through, which is so lovely. So it's a nice thing to know that there's this sort of unity experience between actors, writers, crew, where like if you can get your hands on a Seraph Blade, you're going to grab it and play with it.
Well, and I think I think clearly this is something that I, you know, will always cherish about the show is that everyone who was involved was so passionate about the story mm-hmm. and about bringing it to life and truly excited by the world. And I think you really see that on screen and you see it in the fandom and you see it in every single guest that we are lucky enough to bring on this podcast. So thank you so much for your time and for revisiting this world with us. Yeah. And you are also a co-founder and co-chair of the think tank for inclusion and equity called Right Inclusion. So tell us a bit about that and what how you started that and sort of what the mission is and how people can get involved.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's like I'm segueing into two different types of interviews now.
But it's honestly things like equity and inclusion. It's such a theme for the show and it touched so many of the audience members. I think it's really important to bring it up. I'm sorry if it came out of left field, but I think it's really important to
talk to people. it's also incredible that, you know, a show that was so avid in diversity also has people like yourself who are then doing that in life and in the industry.
So Think Tank for Inclusion and Equity, we just call it TAI because it's easier. So TAI was born out of, like you said, it's a need for equity, inclusion, and diversity in the industry in general. Since I'm a writer, we focus on writers and authentic storytelling. So it's basically, we call ourselves a consortium of working TV writers. And we are BIPOC, women, LGBTQIA+, disabled writers. And we are working to ensure better working conditions for all TV writers, in particular those from historically excluded backgrounds, and promoting accurate, authentic, inclusive, and responsible storytelling. Because one of the things that we do is we create these fact sheets for writers, and it's kind of basically by community. And showing you why authenticity matters. So what is the harm that media has been doing to these to these various communities? What are the stereotypes and tropes that have been perpetuated for decades? And then also, what are better stories that we can be telling about each of these communities? All of these can be found on our website, which is writeinclusion.org. And then we also do an annual report that just digs into how are writers being treated, especially how are historically excluded writers being treated in writers' rooms? Are their voices being heard? Are they being paid as much? Are they being promoted as much? That kind of thing. And so trying to get more inclusivity to impact authentic storytelling is kind of our basic mission.
That's amazing. So then do you get involved with like networks and studios and all of that as well and sort of pass along that information?
We do. And every year when our report comes out, we try and disseminate it as widely as possible. We have some very interesting stats, I would say. Some that might be surprising to some that might not be surprising to others.
Right.
Are you seeing a change in the last couple of years? Or is that still going to take a couple more years of reaction, I guess?
I would say hiring at the lower and mid levels is better.
That's really good.
Inclusion and diversity in upper levels is still not great. That includes things like how many showrunners are from historically excluded backgrounds. And one of the things that we talk about a lot is the lens through which stories are told. And so it's important for stories to be told through the right lens, especially when you're talking about historically excluded communities. Because if you're shifting that lens or you're filtering it through a different lens, then it's being told from an inauthentic perspective. Mm-hmm.
Or even just a third person, you know, I completely agree with you. And I think when you start thinking about it, you can tell as well. You can start seeing that, like, this story is being told by someone who's seen it rather than experienced it, you know? And that's it's an impossible task. Like, how do you tell that story if you haven't experienced that story before? It's an impossible thing to do. So, thank you so much for our community as actors and creatives, and also for these historically excluded groups that need that representation. Thank you for doing that.
Well, and speaking of, you know, we were just speaking to Nicola about this as well, and she's taken so many steps to do the exact same thing on the acting side. And it's funny with the show, we talk about so many empowered female characters and how they were written and how they were portrayed on the show. But what a lot of people may not realize is that behind the scenes and, you know, surrounding the show in front of and behind the camera is a massive group of people that are diverse and empowered, and women especially, that are taking strides in an industry that, you know, can be rather difficult. And, you know, people are given chances to do things with their career that we never thought we'd be able to do. And just thank you for being that voice, because that's all it takes is one person. As you said with Clary, it takes one person to change the world. And I'm pretty sure that might be you.
Oh, well, thank you. I will say the thing that I thought was beautiful, and to give an example of this, was Nick, who played Aldertree, told me once on set that he was, I think, messaged through Twitter or something, one of the fans saying just how grateful they were to see a Black Shadow Hunter, just to be represented on screen in that respect. And that just made my heart leap.
Amazing. And we've got to talk to Nick, because I'm just see my dog's tail like a feather duster walk behind us. Ridiculous.
Well, and now that we're into season two,
we can get Nick on board.
Because the illustrious Aldertree comes sweeping in to change everything. What else can we look for next? You have Vampire Academy, and then what else? What else can we...
What else do you need?
You know... Yeah, well, I mean, you don't. But what ultimately, in your mind, what would be the next kind of dream? Is it Vampire Academy season two? Do you have other prospects in mind, or can you say?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you both for inviting me and for having me here. This has been so much fun and so great seeing you guys again. Oh my gosh.
You as well.
And working with both of you, working with the entire cast, really, but working with you guys was just dream come true. I loved every minute of it. I did. And I hope that we get to work together again.
I do as well. I'm unfortunately a little too old. I was talking to Deepak I think I went to dinner or lunch with him in LA, like right as the TV show for Vampire Academy was being conceptualized. And we both looked at each other and sort of went, I'm too old now, but that's a real shame. I would have loved to come back and play him again. But I think that ship has sailed for me, unfortunately. But that could have been us. That could have been us back together again.
Aw,
it's true.
Another time. If you have a fast forward to something in the future, let me know.
Yeah.
The fast forward is right now I am going to take a vacation. That's all I know.
Smart. So smart.
I think that's so smart.
So smart.
Take
such
some
a great
time,
idea.
Recharge.
And I mean, I know I'm speaking for Kat and so many of the listeners to this podcast. We're so excited to see Vampire Academy. I can't wait to see what you've done with it.
Thank you.
I'm a fan already. I'm stoked. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you, guys.
Well, Shireen, we're big fans of yours, and we're so grateful to have you here. And thank you to the listeners for joining us and celebrating Shireen. And see you next time.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by Catherine McNamara and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia, and our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara. The episode was mixed by Seth Alansky.
Be sure to subscribe to Return to the Shadows wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.